Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my buddy, Bob Dio. Bob, I expected you to wear a red shirt or something today for Valentine's Day. It was 2 days ago that you really came in here styling, baby, with a bow tie and a blue blazer. But today, you're wearing pumpkin color. You're
in sleepy, orange. Sorry.
This is not Halloween, man. This is Valentine's Day. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on Thursday, February 14th, St. Valentine's Day. And coming up at 12:30, our newest contributor to the show, Father Robert, he's our contributor on spirituality and faith, will be joining us. Who in the heck was St. Valentine? Well, Father Robert will tell us all about that. And he'll also talk about, how do we keep this feeling of love going 365 days of the year? The Buckmaster Show also acknowledging, guess what else it is today? Statehood Day, Arizona's birthday. Rahina Romero with me in studio, huh?
Happy cool. Statehood Day.
Happy Statehood Day.
And what a lovely day to celebrate as becoming a state.
Yeah, the Valentine State. And happy Valentine's Day to you as well, Rahina Romero.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you for having me in your show.
Rahina Romero is completing 3 4-year terms, so you'll be at the end of this year, you will be completing your 3 years, 3 terms, 12 years in Ward 1 as the Democrat, and you announced recently that you would like to step up to the position of mayor of the city of Tucson. Why did you come to that decision, Rahina?
Because I want to make sure that we continue on the work that Mayor Rothschild really worked hard on. And I want to make sure that we continue creating a safe, just, and sustainable city with economic opportunity for all children and families. And so I know that I will be the mayor when elected that fights for progressive policies that will affect working families in our community in a positive way. And so I love what I do. I love my service to the residents of the city of Tucson, and I want to continue, what better way to continue my public service than as mayor of the city of Tucson?
Growing up, did you ever think you would get involved in politics? What did you want to be? I mean, when you're a little kid, I don't know, and a lot of people want to be firemen or firewomen or police officers or something. I mean, when you were a little kid growing up, did you say, you know, I really want to get into politics?
No, I never did. And at the time, there were not a lot of examples of women, especially Mexican-American women, in politics. And so I really didn't see myself as a public servant because I didn't see it around me. But I wanted to be a broadcaster.
Wow.
I wanted to be a broadcaster. I wanted to... you know,
did you listen to rock radio, KTKT?
Yeah. I really loved the arts.
99, KTKT.
Well, in Yuma, we had 93.7. I think it was 93.7. I remember the radio station.
You grew
station.
Up in the city of Yuma.
I was born in Yuma. Yeah. My parents have been, there have been five generations or six with me, seven with my kids, Sonoran desert dwellers. So
really? It goes back that many years?
Yeah, just on the Sonoran desert. I mean, my parents were born in Sonora, and their parents before them and their parents before them. And so the Sonoran desert has been our home for many generations. The funny thing is that they are both from Sonora, two little towns 5 minutes from each other, and they didn't meet in their hometown. They met in San Luis, Rio Colorado, Sonora. That is on the border to Yuma, to San Luis, Arizona, and Yuma. And my mom was a teacher, second grade teacher. My dad, early on, joined the Bracero program when he was very young. He was 16, and he was a farm worker.
That was in the, I'll get this straight, was that mid-50s?
Or 50s and early 60s.
And then carried on into 60s.
To the early 60s. And so he came through the Bracero program, had that work permit, and did this for many, many years, migrated from Arizona to California, Arizona to Colorado, and, you know, while married, they had five children in Sonora, in San Luis Rio Colorado, Sonora. He immigrated the family in 6 months, immigrated my mom, my brother, and my four sisters. I was the only one born in Yuma, Arizona, the only citizen. And, you know, we grew up in Somerton, Arizona. I don't know if you know where Somerton
is. I think I do. It's a farm working community in western Arizona, kind of on the way off the freeway there. I've seen the exit sign for it. Looked like there was a gas station and I don't know what else. Not a lot.
A lot of wonderful,
maybe
beautiful people.
Maybe a Cracker Barrel restaurant or something. I don't know.
A lot of beautiful, wonderful farm working families in Somerton. And you know, that's where I grew up. We grew up in the church. We grew up in community. And I did grow up hearing my parents talk about politics. They talked about binational politics, right? Yeah. What's going on in Mexico, what's going on in the U.S.
That might have planted the seed for
you. It really did. And dad and my mom and my mom's sisters would always talk about politics, and they would get very passionate about things. And so I did grow up hearing about how the political process affects working families. And so I didn't think about it, but dad always, he passed away 2 years ago. It's going to be 3 years in April. But dad always talked about how policies affect working families, and really joined the United Farm Workers Union when he was a farm worker, and talked about, you know, working family issues, and always taught us, the family, to value hard work, to value family unity, to do something to contribute to our community. And it really stuck. It has stuck. And my mom, of course, a wonderful, beautiful, very faithful and religious Catholic, always talked about seeing the face of God in others and helping others and each other. And so those values have stuck with me.
Is that going to be your centerpiece of this mayoral run, really about people and economic development?
Yes, I have
three. What would you characterize as the centerpiece of the?
I have three major points in my platform. One is a working family agenda, making sure that we can continue moving all the work that I've done in my 11 years here on the council, making sure that we have economic opportunities for all children in our community and all families. And, you know, in looking at KIDCO, for example, a service that the city of Tucson provides children, it's an after-school program, it's a summer program. It is a program that actually keeps families working. And it's a big tradition in Tucson. KIDCO has been alive and well for 30 years,
I think we need to expand. Yeah, I remember Mayor Miller talking about that. When you brought up KIDCO, I was thinking, you know, Mayor Miller really was into that, as I recall, in my 30-plus years here
in
town.
And when I first ran in 2007, I talked a lot about the importance of KIDCO and providing that
program. You don't hear about that much anymore.
Well, and it's because when the worst economic recession happened, it was at a point where people were asking us to demolish it.
Yeah.
And I really fought for keeping it alive. Now what we need to do, since we're enjoying a good economy, I feel as though we need to make sure that we're expanding the opportunity of KIDCO. We don't have a lot of sites, KIDCO sites, on the east side. We need to expand it to Ward 4 and Ward 2, because there are schools out there and working families that many times moms have to leave their job at 2:45, pick up the kids, or the kids are not in a safe place. They might have to go home. And so KIDCO is a valuable program that continues helping families. And we need to expand it to Amphi and Flowing Wells District as well. We are doing great, a wonderful service and a good partnership with TUSD and Sunnyside, but we need to expand it. And those slots during the summer, I mean, I hear stories of families wanting to subscribe their kids to KidCo, and it sells out in 15 minutes
wow.
for the summer.
So you want to expand opportunities
yes.
for getting kids into the program.
And that's just one of the issues under my working families agenda. You know, where Councilmember Paul Cunningham and Vice Mayor Richard Fimbres, we just signed a memo to the city manager requesting that the city of Tucson pay its employees a minimum wage of $15.
Okay.
Because that's about $31,000 a year.
What is it now? What do they get paid now?
It's minimum wage.
Oh, minimum.
So whatever so the state indicates,
okay.
I think
all
it's
right.
$11 right now.
Okay.
And so we need to do better because as we pay our employees a living wage, mm-hmm. as we pay them good health benefits, we set an example for the private sector and we compete.
All right.
We're really competing for employees as well.
We're going to take a break right here. It's 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're speaking with Tucson mayoral candidate, Ward 1 Democrat, Rahina Romero. If you'd like to join our live line number 790-2040, we'll talk some more with Rahina. But right now, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town. I guarantee you right now, if you go by Mona's Danish Bakery, there'll be something special there for Valentine's Day. I know, to tempt you at Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located in the northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Here's a suggestion. If you're anywhere near Mona's, stop by right now. Have a great sandwich. That bread that you will be served, your sandwich, the bread came out of the oven couple of hours ago, and there's a wide variety of choices. And then how about a Valentine's cookie? I'm sure owner Steve and Chief Baker has come up with something on Valentine's Day. Mona's Danish Bakery.com, or go to buckmastershow.com. that's my website, where you'll find a link to at least 20 partners who make this program possible. Please give them your support. We'll be back with Rahina Romero right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Hi, I'm Ryan Hansen, and we are excited to announce that our annual Travel Showcase has a new location, new presentations, and exciting new offers. Sunday, February 24th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Hilton El Conquistador, we'll have over 40 travel representatives offering a presentation and your chance to learn about where they go, who they are, and their exciting offers. I will also be presenting an unfiltered look at travel topics, so you do not want to miss the 2019 Travel Showcase from Bon Voyage.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Regina Romero is here, Tucson mayoral candidate, but before we get back to our conversation with her, Regina, I want to tell our Buckmaster Show listeners about my favorite nursery in town. That's Green Things. Been around since 1970 over at 3384 East River Road. Here is a partnership made in heaven. You got Green Things on 13 acres with all their great merchandise for the garden. Now Zocalo is there. For years, Zocalo was over by Country Club and Broadway. All that great collection of Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, home accessories, wonderful gifts from all over Latin America. Big open house coming up week from Saturday, 1 to 6 at Green Things and Zocalo Village. Five shops devoted to this great merchandise. Couple of websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Now we continue on with our discussion with Tucson Ward 1 Democrat Regina Romero, candidate for Tucson mayor. What else is on your platform? We talked a little bit about KIDCO in the first segment. Summarize what else are some of the items.
Yeah, we talked about the working family agenda. The other one that's very important that we have to really work on is improving environmental sustainability. Climate change is happening right now, Bill. We need to create an act on climate and a climate resiliency action plan.
I know. I live in Tucson, Arizona, and a couple of years ago after the show, I was driving home in the middle of July. Guess what? The temperature, I'd never seen it so high in Tucson, 121 degrees.
And we need to take advantage of the sun that we get, 350 days a year. We have
340
beautiful
maybe.
Sunshine, and we need to make sure that we and the city of Tucson are taking the responsibility to create a climate resiliency action plan. Install more solar, build a network of electric vehicle charging stations, build neighborhood-level water harvesting infrastructure, plant thousands and thousands of trees, focus on making our buses electric, our transit system electric, and our transit system more affordable, reliable, and an important part of the sustainability conversation. And that we don't do it alone. As a city, we need to make sure that we're working with our regional partners, with the state, with the federal government, to make sure that we're prepared as a city for the changing climate. And here it means heat. And we need to make sure that we have respite stations, that we make our senior centers and our recreation centers a respite place for people that don't, you know, people are spending much more on electric bills. And many seniors turn off the AC because they don't want to pay $400 a month during the warmest months of the year. So we need to make sure that we're working as a region, protect our water resources fiercely, and make sure that we're prepared as we try to stop climate change. The third one is creating economic opportunity. We've been very successful with development and incentives in terms of attracting and expanding companies that create high-wage jobs in Tucson. I propose that we create a small business incentive program that we give the same breaks that we give to large companies, to small businesses, which are the backbone of our economy. And we need to make sure that the city of Tucson is creating small business navigators so that people that are wanting to open their mom and pop restaurant can, from A to Z, rely on the city to help them be successful in that. And every single department in our city should have a yes culture, right? Yes, this is how we can get you here. It might not be this way, but we're going to get you to where you want to get. And I think that the city of Tucson, we really need to show small businesses that we value their contributions to our economy.
All right. We're speaking with Regina Romero, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. In the remaining 4 or 5 minutes, I want to ask Regina about some issues. Yes or no on Tucson has always been a very welcoming community, saying yes to immigrants. Would you take it to the next step? And this is a question that I put to Steve Farley, also one of the mayoral candidates, and Randy Dorman will be with us in a couple of weeks, the third Democrat who is going to be going against, be a three-way primary. What about the sanctuary cities movement? Are you for it or against it?
Well, I agree with the sentiment. Mm-hmm. As you know very well, that I've been working for the last 10 years on the council, I actually was the one that led to create the city of Tucson as an immigrant welcoming city. I will not be supporting the initiative as it's written. I think that one of the biggest problems for Arizona and for the city of Tucson, what has impeded us to go to the sanctuary city and declaring ourselves a sanctuary city, is the lack of work that the state legislature and the governor are doing. We still have SB 1070, and I want to make sure that, you know, the people that are moving the initiative, we got a result, we got an analysis from our city attorney. It is not a pretty picture of what can happen. The state has the power to remove our state shared revenues. And so they'll come after us as a city and remove almost $140 million of state shared revenues from our budget. I cannot support something that will put the city of Tucson in financial disorder. And so I have been a champion of protecting all of our residents in the city of Tucson. I cannot support this.
All right. I've got about 2.5 minutes left. We have not talked about police and fire. Is that an important part of your agenda?
Absolutely. I think police and fire, making sure that we are investing in our public safety personnel, that they have all of the appropriate equipment to make sure that we're saving lives in our community. They're absolutely an important part of my platform, and that really fits under our working family agenda, and the safety and security of every single resident of the city of Tucson. And we have done a wonderful job in the past 4 years in making sure that we fought for and voters voted for Prop 101, which is a public safety component, getting them all of the necessary equipment, ambulances, life-saving equipment that will help our community be safe and thrive. So absolutely, public safety is an important part of our charter. We have to provide good quality service and keep every person that lives here safe.
And we have parks. Parks are looking good
now. Oh, yes.
Thanks to
the voters, we passed a proposition.
So that work's already going to begin here very soon.
And that's why I'm saying that I want to take this blueprint that we've worked with our current mayor on and take it to the next phase and the next level of prosperity for our city.
All right, Regina Romero, where can people find out more about your campaign?
People can visit www.voteReginaRomero.com.
Mm-hmm. And you're in the process of getting signatures?
We're in the process of canvassing and getting signatures throughout the city of Tucson. We need about 3,900 signatures, and we're well on our way. And
so people may get a knock at the door this
weekend.
Oh,
totally, yes. People should expect a knock on the door from my team.
All right, Raheena Romero, thank you very much. Good to see you.
Thank you so much, Bill.
All right, coming up next, Father Robert. He is the newest contributor to the Buckmaster Show on Faith and Spirituality. I want to find out where did St. Valentine come from? Who in the heck was St. Valentine? And how do we continue this wonderful feeling? We're feeling it here at the station. I'm sure many of our listeners are feeling it. Nice feeling of love, people feeling really kind of in a very welcoming mood today. We'll ask Father Robert, how do we kind of keep that going the rest of the year? That's coming up next on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It's the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the... There's really a lot of nice places to stay. They're all listed there on the website. And all sorts of ideas to recreate in Silver City, a very historic part of the Southwest, and Grant County, New Mexico. I know you'll enjoy yourself. We send so many of our listeners over there, and they always say, come back and say, Bill, I had no idea there was this beautiful area, mile-high elevation over there in that Southwest corner of New Mexico. So check it out. Our newest contributor is with me on this Valentine's Day in studio, Reverend Robert Hendrickson, Father Robert, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. Happy St. Valentine's Day, Father Robert.
Thank you, and thanks for having me back. It's always great to be with you.
Where does all of this come from, this tradition with St. Valentine? Was St. Valentine a martyr of some kind, I would assume?
Yes, so there are a couple of different stories. There's a little confusion. There are two possible biographies from around the 3rd century. One set of stories says that Valentine was a temple priest of some sort and that he was beheaded for helping Christian couples get married. But as early as about 496, so the year 496, Pope Gelasius I, if I have to remember, my memory serves me, actually said of Valentine, someone whose deeds are known only to God, because there were so many conflicting legends by that point. And in 1969, he actually came off the Roman Catholic Church calendar, so he's not officially commemorated anymore because they can't figure out exactly who he was or what he did. And so there are a lot of legends that have built up. There were, I think, six Valentines who were made saints. There was a Pope who was named Valentine.
Really?
And all those stories have all gotten mixed up.
There was a Pope Valentine?
There was a Pope Valentinius, which gets translated.
I didn't realize that it's now not part of the Roman Catholic calendar.
Now it's basically a secular holiday. It's not officially part of it. Now, the day is still the date of his martyrdom. So he was martyred on February 14th, allegedly.
Right.
And so that's why the date has stayed fixed there.
Well, it may be a secular and is a secular kind of holiday, but it's something I think that there's some wisdom, certainly, that we could try to carry some of this nice feeling about love.
Absolutely. Well, and I think even more than feeling. I mean, I think I'm always struck that English is so impoverished about the word love, because I can talk about how I love my wife or I love my family. But then you can also sort of go out a layer and say, well, I love my dog. Sure, maybe not quite in the same way. But then you can go out another layer and say, well, I love a cupcake. And you can go out another layer and say, well, I love a steak. Like, we just don't have the nuance language to actually do what other cultures do. So, for example, I think Sanskrit has 100 words for love. Mm. The Greek, we know, has 6 words for love, and they're all different. And so for when you're translating scriptures, for example, there's that wonderful passage where Jesus and Peter are talking. And Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? And he asked him 3 times. Each time he says, do you love me? It's a different level of love that he's asking Peter to commit to. And so even that nuance gets lost in the way we translate things. And I think this has happened in our culture, is that we have so ironed out the meaning of love that it's kind of lost its context. And I think we're longing for the depth and complexity that other cultures have naturally at their disposal to talk about love. And I think we need to sort of recapture that somehow. And I think we long for these periodic reminders to be called back into love. So even if it's a secular holiday, I think that at our deepest level, we know that we are meant to love and to be loved. That's what we're called into. And Christian scripture talks about God who is love and talks about if you love someone in the midst of that, you find God. And so I think there's something to it that's more than secular, certainly spiritual, and various religious traditions have tried to capture it in words. Even when their language was as deprived as English is of nuance.
When you look at the church calendar, we've got, of course, the big marquee. One of the big marquee events of the church calendar will be Easter and, of course, running Lent coming up very soon. There are these reminders throughout the church calendar that kind of to step back and maybe think about that word love.
Sure. Well, and you think about the wonderful thing about the shape of, say, what we call the liturgical year, the kind of markers of different feasts through the year to remind us of what it is we're part of and what it is we commit to. There are all these periodic reminders to go more deeply into love with one another and with God. So, for example, in that time before Easter, before we do all that sort of raucous celebration, we have 40 days of Lent where we're called to oftentimes people will give something up, but the call is really to figure out where are we losing sight of who we are meant to be as human beings, and how can we live more fully into who God is calling us to be. And so, you know, often people will give up chocolate or alcohol or something like that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I think what we're actually being called to give up is those things that stand in the path between us and a deeper knowledge of God and one another, and those things that kind of are calling our attention away. So in the Hebrew scriptures, the word that gets translated as sin is actually something quite different. It's actually more about an absence of something in Hebrew scripture. In Greek, the word we use is metanoia, which actually means a turning toward. So sin is more the turning away from that which is calling us to love, and repentance is actually turning back toward the thing that calls us to who we are meant to be, and back toward the thing to which we are to be drawn, which is God, who's calling us with love.
We're speaking with Father Robert. He is the Buckmaster Show, a faith and spirituality contributor on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. You had a very successful trip over to the Middle East and to the Holy Land. How many times have you been over there?
This is my third time over.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And what do you take away from these visits?
You know, each time it's something different. Oftentimes the first time you go to the Holy Land, you very much go as a tourist because you're seeing new things, you're meeting new people and all of that. The second time I went, I was struck by the holiness of some of the sites, the Church, the Nativity, and the Holy Sepulchre. And I did an overnight where you can sleep overnight in the Holy Sepulchre. And this last time, I was struck by the land and the people itself. And it's almost impossible to come away from a conversation with someone who's a Palestinian or an Israeli and think about the contemporary context of that, of what we call the Holy Land, and not be called back into the kind of very harsh realities of what the scriptures are telling us. So, for example, this last time we went to an orphanage called the Creche. And it's the only orphanage in the West Bank, and they talk about women, young girls, really, coming in the dead of night, ashamed and afraid because they're going to have a baby and their families could punish them in some way or another. And here are these nuns taking them in and helping them give birth. And you wonder if that's what Mary was experiencing in Scripture. Was she ashamed or afraid? What was it like for her to kind of creep through the night and wonder what people were saying about her, and who did she find to help her? And so you begin to connect the reality of today with the reality of the stories that unfold in Scripture. And so that it always brings those alive to me in a new way when I go.
That you actually spent the night there in the
Holy Sepulchre, you can.
And was it 5 a.m.? Everybody's up with prayers or something?
Oh, it's a funny place because, it has a lot of protocol.
Yeah.
If anyone pulls up a picture of the Holy Sepulchre online, you'll see that there's this ladder above the door that hasn't been moved in hundreds of years because no one can agree as to who has the right to move the ladder of the three Christian groups that run the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. But it's really an amazingly kind of... a place that's full of depth that initially when you walk in, you're sort of perplexed by it. But then if you can just pause and take in the smell and the sight and the sound, you know, right early in the morning, you've got sometimes at 2 a.m., sometimes at 4 a.m., these sort of glorious Armenian and Greek Orthodox liturgies started, the Coptic liturgies start, the Roman Catholic liturgies. And so it's sort of a place that's always at prayer. And what's even more meaningful is between those sort of moments of big public prayer are the thousands and thousands of people who are there making their own prayer. So this is the site to which people have come for two millennia to make prayer at the foot of the cross and at the site of the resurrection.
Father Robert is with us. Do you normally, what type of area when you give up something for Lent? I'm just curious, is it something different every year?
It tends to be something different, although many of us will find over time that we have the same sins year after year. So our challenges often remain consistent. And so for me, it's more a time to kind of pare back a little bit and figure out what's cluttering my relationship with God. And so I might decide to sort of recommit to the more rigorous observance of the daily office, which is prayer, morning prayer, noonday prayer, evening prayer. Or I might decide that this is a year I need to recommit around physical health or time off or those sorts of things and really being dedicated about those sorts of things. This year, I haven't quite decided what it's going to be yet. So maybe I'll ask you what I should give up. You probably have a better insight than I do.
You'll have to get back to me on that one. All right, on this St. Valentine's Day, just kind of an ending message here about how we can kind of carry that spirit, that goodwill spirit through the whole year.
Yeah, I think we have to commit to it at a personal level in order for it to take root. And I think it, just in the same way these days, people have to schedule. You have to schedule your time for relaxation, your time for exercise, your time for so many things. I think we've got to actually carve out space, whether that's spiritual space or space just in quiet. And I think we are getting distracted from the primary vocation of Christians and people in general, I would say, which is to love one another as we are loved. And so I think we've got to figure out a way to find space to rest, to pray, to commit, to learn more. By learning, I don't mean sort of just information. I mean actually going into the wisdom of life, that life can unfold with us, and being inquisitive, finding sort of time to go out into the world and to encounter folks who are different than us. And I think that there are two things that I always tell couples when they're about to be married. The first is that you can be right or you can be in relationship. And if you love being right more than being in the relationship, it's always going to fail. And the second is that you have to love the person enough to let them change and to let them change you when you're in love.
Good advice from Father Robert, rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. You can find out more about Father Robert. His bio is up on our contributors page. We're just so honored to have Father Robert and about 24 or 25 other regular contributors, people who I admire very much, who take part in this program. Father Robert, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Happy Valentine's Day to you.
And to you as well. Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back on Buckmaster. It's 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Do you think termites cause the most damage to your home? Think again. It's the pack rat that is the real king when it comes to causing damage to your property. This is Brett Holland, owner of Gecko Pest Management. Gecko Pest Management can help eliminate all of your unwanted pests, from roaches to termites, scorpions, and bees. We are proud of our A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and the Super Service Awards from Angie's List. So for all of your unwanted pests, call Gecko Pest Management at 579-1701. Or online at geckopest.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
The following segment made possible by UA Biosphere 2, where science lives. Find out more about UA Biosphere 2 at biosphere2.org. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line is Dr. Diane Thompson, Director of Marine Research at Biosphere 2, where she leads the Biosphere 2 Ocean Research Initiative. She is also an assistant professor in the University of Arizona Department of Geoscience. How are you, Professor Thompson?
Great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I'm very curious to hear an update about Biosphere 2 Ocean. This is the first phase of an exciting new project that will test novel solutions for the future of our coral reefs. How is all of that being done at Biosphere 2?
Yes, I know you've talked a lot about Biosphere 2 on your show, and obviously the Biosphere 2 historically has been really at the heart of understanding coral reefs in the face of climate change. And so back in the day, in the 90s and early 2000s, we learned a lot about how ocean acidification is impacting our coral reefs and really slowing the rate at which they can grow. But fast forward, into the 2010s, and U of A has really led this research, and we're starting a new phase to actually rebuild coral reefs back at the Biosphere 2 and test new solutions that have been developed for coral reefs over the past few years.
How do you build a coral reef indoors and, like, under the glass at Biosphere 2?
Yeah, so that's where we've been working really hard, and I'm actually pretty new to the project. So I started in September, and we've really had the pedal to the metal, if you will, since I've arrived. But really my team, led by the Deputy Director, John Adams, and Katie Morgan, who's the Manager of Marine Systems, have been doing a lot of heavy lifting over the last couple years to basically set construction plans to completely re-engineer the system. So it turns out that there, especially with the glass in the Biosphere 2, that light and other things have been limiting to corals in the Biosphere 2 ocean. Mm. And so we're going to completely re-engineer the system to support coral reefs of the future and allow us to test some of these really novel solutions that have been developed in the coral reef research community over the last couple of years.
A long time ago, my wife and I would travel the world going snorkeling. We went to the Great Barrier Reef, went to places like Bonaire in the Caribbean, the Seychelles Islands in the Indian Ocean. Unfortunately, a lot of the places where we would do our snorkeling, like the Great Barrier Reef, have really been in a terrible crisis, and a lot of that beautiful reef area is gone forever. Is there reason for hope, though?
Yeah, and that's why I'm here. I mean, I'm super excited to be a part of this project and here at the U of A and the Biosphere 2 because I do have hope. And so I've been in that similar situation. I revisited a reef that I first visited as a kid and fell in love with coral reefs, and it was gone when I returned less than 5 years later.
Where was that?
It was in the Caribbean, in the U.S. Virgin Islands,
right.
Buck Island Marine Sanctuary.
I have snorkeled there. Yes,
yeah,
that's
so
a beautiful area.
You know, it was just decimated when I returned.
Wow.
And, you know, and there's reasons for hope. Parts of that, you know, reef and other Caribbean reefs are coming back. So basically, we've learned a lot over the last, you know, few decades about what corals, what algae that they associate with in their tissues, what locations of reefs do well when they're hit by these really hot temperatures. And we've learned which reefs do less well and why. And so we've learned a lot about process. But over the last few years, we've realized as a coral reef community that we need to move from process to solutions. And so what gives me a lot of hope is that in the last, you know, 5-10 years, we've developed a number of really radical even solutions for saving the reefs. And these are things like actually hardening the reefs by exposing them to high temperature, because we know that much like me being from Minnesota, I'm less right. tolerant to cold. Mm-hmm. So if you hit these corals hard with temperature stress before they have these huge global events, then they're less likely to be severely hit. And there's other even more extreme solutions, like actually, you know, gene editing assisted evolution techniques, or even adding probiotics, much like we take probiotic pills to help corals fight diseases, which reduce their tolerance to these other types of events driven by warming and ocean acidification.
What would be the Goldilocks of this whole control and scale underway there at the Biosphere 2 Ocean?
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. So the reason why the Biosphere 2 comes into these solutions is we have this ability to test these solutions. And so some of them, especially the more radical ones, we don't want to just apply to the natural reefs before they've really been critically tested. But in order to do that, as you just said, you need the scale of a reef where you can test how these solutions, when put out on our wild reefs, would actually interact with, you know, fish species and the microbial community living in the coral tissues. We need to understand the process all the way up through all these scales. And this is something that the Biosphere 2 can do. This is our bread and butter. We have that scale. And then the other key piece is that we need to be able to test these solutions under expected conditions in the future. Because we can implement all these strategies, but if they're not going to be able to survive as climate continues to warm and ocean acidification continues to lower the pH of our oceans, then those corals, it's going to be a waste of money. We're putting corals out there that just aren't going to survive. And so we need to test these restoration methods somewhere where we have both the scale and the precise control. And that's where the Biosphere 2 really can have a huge impact on solutions for coral reefs.
Diane, I had a thought. Have you checked out areas of the world where the coral reefs are thriving and maybe figuring out why those particular areas are the reefs doing well?
Absolutely. Those are like the bright spots, if
yeah.
you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we're hoping to actually take all that research that has figured out where those bright spots are and take corals from those areas, as well as corals that have been reared in captivity and hardened in captivity, and put them in the Biosphere 2 and create this really novel ecosystem where we bring together corals that may or may not have ever even been in the same place. So Pacific corals, Caribbean corals, potentially even Red Sea corals, and bring them together and see, what does the reef of a future look like? What are its key constituents, and what is their role in keeping the structure and the function of a reef? Because, you know, as you know, the reason why it matters is, in addition to the fact that we love reefs and you and I like to go and snorkel
yes.
on reefs,
yes.
is that they're fundamental to society. They protect our coasts and they provide basically a city, much like New York, for a number of fish and invertebrates to live and thrive on these reefs. And without the structure of reefs, we're going to lose those key services that the coral reefs provide. And so that's where we really need to come up with solutions.
All right, Diane Thompson, thank you so much, Director of Marine Research at Biosphere 2. She's leading the Biosphere 2 Ocean Research Initiative. I am out of time, but just out of my own curiosity, can you give me an example of maybe a couple of places where reefs are doing well in the world? Could you give me a couple of those?
Yeah, so there's parts of the tropical Pacific Ocean where, particularly in parts of the reef where they're really hit hard by things like El Nino events, and
right.
so they're stressed out frequently, mm-hmm. they tend to do better. And those bright spots are where we need to be looking in the future.
All right. Thank you so much, Diane. A pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Following segment was made possible by Biosphere 2, where science lives. You can find out more about all the great research they're doing there by visiting their website. All sorts of great information, including the visiting hours and everything you need to know about it. A visit to Biosphere 2 by visiting biosphere2.org. I'm Bill Buckmaster, Bob Dio on the other side of the glass, doing, as usual, a great job. Steve Rivera is coming up next, his show Eye on the Ball, right here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have a great afternoon and evening.